Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Much of our regional conversation in recent years is centered on issues of race, class, and culture. It was the subject of a lecture last evening at an event sponsored by the St. Louis Psychoanalytic Institute. The focus was on how to understand such complex issues through psychoanalysis. Featured speaker was Dr. Neil Altman, a nationally recognized psychoanalytic psychotherapist, clinician, and author, and lecturer. He joins me in studio, and also with us is Lenita Newberg, director of the Advanced Psychodynamic Psychotherapy Program and the St. Louis Psychoanalytic Institute. That, my friends, is a mouthful. I'm glad I got through that relatively unscathed. Thank you so much for being with us, Neil. It's great
Thanks
to have you in
us,
St. Louis.
Having,
Let me begin with you. How do we get Sigmund Freud into the conversation about race, class, and culture?
Well, first of all, psychoanalysis has gone way beyond Sigmund Freud. I mean, Sigmund Freud got us started, but there have been a lot of developments more recently. And it's kind of interesting how people keep focusing on Freud. I mean, he was a genius, and he had some amazing breakthroughs. But the important thing at the moment is that St. Louis is at the epicenter of a lot of the tension around racial and cultural, social class categories in the United States right now, and a psychoanalytic institute has to be able to have something to say about that if it wants to be relevant in today's world. And, you know, Freud did talk about social issues, but we have tools now for doing that that are new. And so I think it's really important that this happened last night.
Well, it's one thing to have something to say about it. It's another thing to be able to do something about it.
Yes.
How can psychoanalysis do that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, having an understanding of how racial categories, for example, get constructed for psychological purposes, I think is important background knowledge to have before you start to do something. And also understanding where you are coming from, where each of us is coming from when we try to do something is important too. So that's important. But I think that in terms of action, people sometimes tend to get paralyzed and feel helpless and don't see what they can do that will make a difference. And I think psychoanalytic therapy, along with other forms of therapy, aim to empower people and to challenge the bases of their feelings of helplessness. Mm-hmm. So that's one very important way.
Lenita, what's going on here, the epicenter, as Neil has indicated, of a lot of racial tension?
You know, I think initially, Don, what I'd say is I very often feel, what can I do to contribute to the healing in our community? And it feels like anything I could come up with would be a drop in the bucket. Mm-hmm. But we're at a juncture where surely we need all the drops in the bucket. So what can we do? I think what we're trying very much to pay attention to what contributions we have, at the same time recognizing that as a community, we're still trying to put all those pieces together. We're still trying to figure out how those drops fuse together to become a bigger wave. So in trying to understand from a mental health perspective, what are the things we do understand psychoanalytically about how people are put together as individuals? What happens then in groups? St. Louis, wow, we've seen so much of the fear and the anger and the hurt. Very justifiable. Everybody's feeling something pretty intense, and then we have to get to the next step of saying, okay, and now what do I do with that? So that we're not simply mired in the anger and the fear. And as we ended up talking about last night a little bit, some of the shame. So many emotions which are pretty raw, pretty elemental. Trying to work with that in a constructive way instead of it being destructive.
It would seem to me, that I'll have both of you respond to this if you would, that you would have to deal with these emotions and these feelings on an individual basis. It would have to be person by person instead of a group project. Am I off base on that?
Well, obviously, from the psychoanalytic perspective, that's where our domain has worked primarily.
Sure.
I'm not a sociologist. I'm not a group psychologist. I can't tell you how that plays out. To the extent that we can work with it individually, I think that's one of our strengths, obviously, at the Psychoanalytic Institute. But If we don't take care of it as an individual, for example, how does that then bleed over if a mother, for example, is feeling quite overtaken with her grief, her anger, her fear? How does that impact the kids that she is trying to raise, or a teacher, or anybody else? So there is the responsibility for dealing with it individually, and then there's a kind of groupthink too.
That was the word I was going to use, groupthink, because obviously to make progress you have to affect a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And quickly. What do you think about that, Neil?
Well, I think psychoanalysis has gotten known as an individual psychotherapy that takes place between two people. But I think to some extent that's a historical artifact of how it got developed. And having a psychoanalytic point of view, which for me amounts to trying to be aware of your own blind spots, is something that can operate on a group level as well as an individual level. Another point there is that people are members of communities and groups. And so the feeling of not being heard or not being recognized is something that's shared on a group level and contributes to group formation around political movements. So I think one of the things that we do well as psychoanalysts is we listen and we recognize when people are feeling invisible and unheard and try to respond to that.
Before you go any further, define psychoanalysis for me. Let's make sure that everybody knows exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, well, if we had a few hours, there's a lot to go into about that, and there's disagreement within the field. But what I would say is that psychoanalysis is about trying to be aware of one's blind spots, otherwise known as the unconscious. The unconscious was defined by Freud in very narrow terms as having to do with sex and aggression. I think we need to take it beyond that and strive to be aware of what we are not aware of. It's a constant process of consciousness raising, having to do with what we don't want to know, what makes us anxious, what makes us feel guilty and ashamed on one level, and on another level, how we've been socialized into certain attitudes that we're not even aware of because we take it in with our mother's milk, so to speak.
Yeah. Do you want to add anything to that, Lenita?
Just to say that this is one of the reasons that we brought in Dr. Altman, because we are trying very much to figure out, I think as a field, as you say, but here in St. Louis specifically, how can we take this out of the consulting room, not because we want to leave it behind at all, but because we want to take it further and have it not be only a one-on-one experience. Mm. Dr. Altman has worked a lot in India and working with psychoanalytic principles there. So he's had years and years of experience in that.
I keep coming back to this notion of it's being an individual situation, because it needs, in a community like ours, it needs to be broader than that. Mm-hmm. Do the individual and getting the individuals to come to you or come to someone that they can talk about these things with, it has to be voluntary. I mean, they have to take the initiative, don't they? You can't go out and Shanghai them.
Right. No, you can't Shanghai people, but you can go to meet people where they are. If you make yourself relevant, you can do community interventions. So you need the entree. You need the welcome into a community. But taking psychoanalysis out of the office means that you make contacts with people, you network in the community, and you find places where you can intervene around psychological distress and suffering.
Are we doing any of that here?
I think that we do it in different ways, but not nearly so profoundly, I suppose, as you have done it.
Well, the work in schools is an example of that. There are all sorts of communities. There are schools, there are hospitals. Psychoanalysts serve as consultants to people who do work with foster children, for example, working with the families of foster children. There are many examples of places where a psychoanalytic perspective can be useful in a community.
You've done this elsewhere. Lenita mentioned that you've done work in India. What can you point to there? What kind of progress, success have you seen elsewhere?
Well, for example, one of the things that I haven't personally been involved with but goes on in India and other places in the world is putting a mental health paraprofessional in medical doctors' offices. So, for example, people will come in with physical complaints, and you don't have to listen very long before you find out that a woman's husband is beating her or there's alcoholism or something like that. And a medical doctor who people will naturally turn to when they have a physical symptom can say, you know, there's this nice lady over here that you could talk to about the background to this.
Right. And you've seen obvious results from that.
Oh, yeah. There's a big program all around the world run by a man named Vikram Patil who does that all around the world.
It would seem to me, too, and again, I'm making some assumptions here and doing a little bit of guesswork, that you've got to unpack a lot of baggage with people. I mean, we talk about people grow, you know, the Rodgers and Hammerstein, you've got to be taught to hate. People have arranged their stereotypical thinking since day one.
Yeah.
And you've got to unpack all of that over a relatively brief period of time.
The thing is, though, you have to unpack your own baggage first before you can help other people unpack their baggage.
You're talking about the psychoanalyst?
Yes, absolutely, because we have our own prejudices also. And we avoid community work in part because we don't want to be exposed to that kind of suffering. So we have to work with ourselves that way.
So you've got to pick the right psychoanalyst who has unpacked that baggage to continue.
Not already unpacked, who's willing to engage in the process of unpacking
it. I see. So they've got to recognize in and of themselves what they're dealing with.
Yeah.
We'll come back and pick up the conversation in just a moment. I have to take a break. We are talking about psychoanalysis and dealing with issues of race, culture, and class. My guests in studio, Neil Altman and Lenita Newberg. We'll come back and continue the conversation. If you'd like to be a part of it, it's a very interesting thing to talk about and think about. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org. Or if you would prefer to send a tweet, do so at STL on Air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back to our conversation about race, class, and culture and psychoanalysis. It would seem to me that different people would be receptive differently to the kinds of conversations we're talking about. Not everybody is going to react the same way. I have to assume I'm right on that.
Well, it's true. But if you call what you're doing psychotherapy or psychoanalysis, people get nervous. If you sit next to a stranger on the bus, you'll hear their whole life story by the time you get to your destination. So you've got to be able to build on that, that people want to talk and want to be known.
They do. But do you have to have an extra sensory perception, or do you, to figure out the approach?
Yes, you have to have intuition. I mean, it's extra sensory, yes, but it's not mysterious. I mean, we all do that with people all the time. We make sort of quick judgments about where the lines of communication are potentially open.
What about the issue, I'll ask you this, the issue of stereotyping? I know that's, how would you approach that?
Well, it certainly would depend on the setting, I suppose. But say clinically, if somebody is representing a certain situation the same time after time after time, we might start asking about, well, I wonder how much information you had about that and what sort of assumptions you were making. Yeah. So we would start perhaps from that perspective with somebody who's open to it. It's part of the whole process, as you said, is if somebody's coming to therapy, they're saying, I'm here because I want to look at myself. I want to try to grow as a person. Sometimes that's not always so comfortable. Yeah. That's why when, especially here in the Midwest, I think, it's maybe not so much the case in New York where Dr. Altman lives, but when people say, I'm going to therapy, there's often this sense of, oh my gosh, what, you're not taking care of your own work? Well, yes, that's really taking care of your own work, is putting yourself through the process of self-review and growth.
But Neil, I get the impression from some of the things you said, we're not always talking about people coming in to see you for therapy. You're talking about conversations on a bus and going into schoolrooms and that sort of thing. That's a different setting altogether.
Well, I think it's important to recognize when you're talking about stereotypes that we all rely on stereotypes all the time, and we make judgments about people unconsciously. Like when I walked in here today and met you, unconsciously and just automatically, I orient myself to who you are based on visual and auditory cues and things like that.
And you said, get me out of here fast, right?
I came right in. But, you know, the racial categories and the cultural categories are often at the forefront of those automatic stereotype formation processes. And it's a two-way street, you know, and so people who come in for therapy and people who are engaged in any kind of conversation are assessing what are the stereotypes that are being imposed on me and how can I manage that, and hopefully what stereotypes have I imposed on you that I can be more aware of.
We have a caller here. Let's bring Victoria into the conversation. She's calling from Illinois, and let's see what she has to say. Victoria, go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to say it sounds as if you're talking about Buddhism. I just came in on it, and I just want to know if that there's some relationship between what you're saying and Buddhism.
I definitely agree with you. I'm not exactly sure what you mean by that. Can you say one more sentence about what the interface is with Buddhism?
Well, as far as looking inward at yourself.
Yes, yeah.
And finding out your shortcomings and trying to be positive. And it just sounds, if you're talking about Buddhism, I don't know if that's true.
Absolutely. And being mindful of yourself and how you're making meaning of different situations. That's in common between a Buddhist attitude and a psychoanalytic attitude.
Okay.
I agree with you.
So he was pretty much probably the father of psychoanalysis.
Buddha?
Well,
yeah. I mean, Freud didn't come out of nothing, you know, and he turned his back on religion. But I think there's precedence. Yeah, there are very interesting precedents for, and there's actually right now there's a rapprochement going on between psychoanalysis and Buddhism.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
That's not a connection we hear of often. Lindita, is that a connection that you make?
Absolutely. I wouldn't say that all analysts do by any stretch. It's something like calling ourselves Freudian. I use some of Freud's ideas every day, but he died almost 80 years ago. Mm-hmm. So there's, as Neil started out saying, there's a great explosion of understanding in the past 80, 100 years. And so there are segments of the field that consider themselves very Buddhist and others who would say absolutely not. So it's a wide, wide spectrum.
How do you get to the people who are fixed in their ideas and think that their ideas are right, although the ideas might be very wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Somehow you've got to get at them. They've got to come to you. Mm-hmm. I think I mentioned this before. How do you get to these folks?
Well, first of all, I think I have to be aware of the times that I can get fixed in my own ideas too and avoid getting into a tug of war with people. People who come across as being very fixed in their ideas very often don't expect to be heard. They feel like they have to keep repeating themselves and saying the same thing over and over again because nobody's listening. Mm.
This idea of self-awareness is one that I would grapple with in trying to figure out exactly what that means. You've got to clear so much muck out of the way to get to that point.
Right. But it helps not to feel like you ever get to the end of that process. Like you don't have to clear all the muck out before you can start. Mm-hmm. You could think that clearing the muck out is an endless process and worthwhile in itself. And that's part of what people need to do together with each other and in and out of therapy.
Again, it brings me back to the situation that we're dealing with here in this community. In the whole country, we've got this great polarized society anymore. Is getting to them and getting people willing to start to think in the way that you're talking about here. It seems to me like it's a challenge that is futile.
Well, as Neil says and points out, once we truly hear someone, it's almost strange in the clinical setting we see it, and I think it happens in society too. When somebody feels heard, that's when there's an opportunity for them to actually start hearing us. It's like the beginnings of compassion happen when somebody has been compassionate with you. You learn to see that there's another side. But until that has happened, it's pretty darn rare that somebody can suddenly change their mind.
Well, I'm thinking of the people who feel they are not being heard and have never been heard and probably never will be heard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they need to be worked on as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, sometimes people try to be heard in forms other than in words, in their actions. And so that's another area that I think psychoanalysts can develop an expertise is receiving nonverbal action-based communications.
Can you give me, Neil Altman, a game plan for dealing with a community like ours? How would you go about trying to do the repair work in a sharply divided community?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't have the final answer to that. I think I like the word repair. Mm-hmm. I like the idea that damage has been done and continues to be done, and that we need to find a source of hope to address that. So, for example, last night there was one lady who talked about how the dilemmas in a situation like what we have now in this country boil down to love versus fear. And so one of the ways of dealing with that, I think, is to look at fear from a psychological point of view and the sources of it, and to try to address that. And feeling like you're not being heard makes people afraid. It makes them anxious and afraid. Mm-hmm. So that's...
We've got a lot of people, Lenita, in this community who feel that way.
Absolutely.
Right. What does the Psychoanalytic Institute do?
We're primarily an educational institute. We train people in psychotherapy and psychoanalysis, and that's one of the reasons that our focus has been there. We're not a huge institute, and so we have a growing number of students who are mental health professionals working in all kinds of situations across the community. They're in schools, they're in houses of worship of different faiths. We've got people who are very much in the community trying to do the work of helping people feel heard, not necessarily coming to therapy all the time.
Mm-hmm. What sort of a game plan would you devise for dealing with the division? We have about a minute left.
Oh, no pressure
no,
there.
No, whatsoever.
Well, some of it is really trying to open dialogue. We're having a talk tonight with mental health professionals, with Dr. Altman, trying to figure out how to help those mental health professionals function in our community. And tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock at the Institute, we're going to hopefully be having a little bit more of a discussion from people of different walks in life. How do we help facilitate this conversation precisely to go forward and find some substantive actions to try to heal?
Neil Altman, there's a lot of work to do and here and across the country, isn't there?
There's a lot of work to do, and you can't be aiming to do it all. You have to take it one person or one community at a time.
The journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step.
Absolutely.
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Neil Altman, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks
Welcome
for having
to St.
us.
Louis. And Lenita Newberg, thank you for being with us.
Thank
nice
you so
to
much,
see you
Don.
Once again. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is produced by Alex Hoyer and Laura Hamden, with production assistance from Aaron Dorr, Char Daston, and Spencer Reed. The executive producer is Mary Edwards. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.